Did you know that 40% of any new information that we receive, we forget within 24 hours of hearing it? That's why this episode is all on study. Hi, my name is Alicia Griffiths and welcome to the Breakaway Tuition Podcast. This episode is all about study. So, mums and dads, this episode will help you understand what is expected in terms of studying from year seven, but it'll also help students, if they wanted to listen to this podcast as well, to understand what study is and how to go about it. The other thing that you want to be thinking about is year 11 and 12. I have a specific course written for you for study that goes into study in more detail. All you have to do is pop across to my Facebook page and my website, www.breakawaytuition.com.au, to purchase the course there. So what is study? This is a buzzword. You'll hear this word all the time. You'll probably read student booklets that get sent home, and they're all about study. You should be studying, study, 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 but what exactly is it? So for some reason, there's this massive idea that study is some sort of sacred thing that is specifically done at this time. In actual fact, studying can include things like revising work, doing homework, and also completing assignments. So it's not just something that you would do as you are working towards an exam, but it's something that we can do regularly. So one of the things that you'll find is that lots of schools have different expectations around how much study a student should be doing. So one of the suggestions online has said that as a rule of thumb, you should be doing the amount of study for the year that you're in. So if you're in year seven, then you should be doing 7 hours of study a week. Now, that might be 1 hour a day. Another one online, though, suggests, and this is from ATAR Calculator, they suggest that for year 11, they should be studying 18 hours a week, and year 12 should be studying 24 hours a week. That is a massive 4 hours a night for 6 days a week. Now, that is massive, and that's really hard for our senior students to do, which is why I have got a separate course for them to have a look at. And you know, sometimes these things that we throw around, they're not really realistic. If you factor in sport and jobs that your kids might be doing, and any other extracurricular activities, music, anything that they go out to do, by the time they get home at, you know, 6 or 7 at night, have dinner, there's very little time left to do 4 hours of study a night that they're suggesting. And realistically, it's not exactly healthy for a student to be sitting down for that whole session of that 4 hours. So obviously, like I said, you can classify homework and assignments as study as well. And also reviewing and revising notes, or creating some sort of notes that the students can use then as a study guide. Now, 60.4% of students start studying the month before they have an exam. And luckily, only 6.6% start studying the night before. So encourage your family and your kids to have some sort of sustained study routine that will help them to continually add up all the things that they've been learning in class, rather than squeezing it into before the night before. And in actual fact, I suggest, particularly for my year 11 and 12 students as well, that the night before you shouldn't even be studying, because what you don't know the night before, you're not going to know by the next morning. Because again, we only remember 40% of any information that we come across. So, you know, to set up a study space is a really good place to start. Now, I know lots and lots of homes will have a study space that is in their bedroom. I would suggest against having study spaces in students' bedrooms, just because that confuses our brains. You know, our bedroom should be a place of a sanctuary for us to go to and a place for us to unwind, and it shouldn't necessarily be a place where we go and study. So that's one thing that you want to be thinking about not to do. If we are always studying in our rooms, then it means that it's hard for our brain to shut off when we go into our room just to sleep. You know, it's the same thing as keeping devices outside of rooms and things to aid sleep and sleep production as well. The best place to study, though, is a place without any distractions. So a study that is specifically created as a study is a great place for someone to do some homework. You know, the kitchen bench can also be a great place to do some homework if there is an elimination of noise in that space as well. And you want to have things that your child needs really close and easy to grab. So if they're going to need paper, you're going to want to have paper in a really easily accessible place, and pens, and you want to have all of those things there that they can just grab and use straight away, rather than then wasting time trying to find the materials they need to do their study or their homework, and then by the time they've found all the materials, they just don't feel like doing it, so they don't put the effort in. The other thing that you want to be thinking about is that you need to form your study and study routines to be like a habit. So, you know, I wouldn't expect a student to do 1 hour or 2 hours of study every single night. That is in addition to homework. But I would expect that they might do a half hour session a day or a night, and that they do it at the same time, because that's the time that they're going to do this, and so that's then forming the habit. So if they need to do more in 1 week or in a couple of weeks, then because they've already formed that habit, is this is when I do my homework or this is when I do my study, it's not going to be massively different for them to then sit down and study at that time as well. You also want to think about, you know, other things. So if you are expecting them to come straight home from school and do study and they haven't had anything to eat, then they're not going to be studying effectively because they're hungry. If you're standing in front of them cooking dinner while they're trying to study, then they're not going to be studying effectively because they'll just be salivating and thinking about dinner. You don't want to be standing in front of them trying to ask them about their day if you're expecting that that's the time that they're sitting down to do their study. You know, you want to make sure that they have water and a water bottle there so that they can keep hydrated, and maybe some healthy snacks while they're studying. There is actually a range of studies out there that suggest that chewing and I think really crunchy foods was what came up in the study actually aided memory. So there's something for you to try. But you're wanting to make sure that, you know, they're comfortable. They're not too hot. They're not too cold. Because all of those different things, as much as they might seem ridiculous, they all add to whether someone's going to want to study or someone's going to use that as an excuse not to study. So that's one thing that you want to be thinking about for space. Now, the standard person, and this is like adults as well, can only sit down and work effectively for between 20 and 30 minutes. So anything over that time, actually the production or, you know, the memory recall starts diminishing after that 30 minute time period. So one thing that you're wanting to try and get your kids to do is break up their study into 20 to 30 minute lots, and then, you know, setting an alarm for that time and getting them to do something physical after that. So go for a walk, you know, done my first 30 minutes of study. Now I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to do my second 30 minutes of study, and then I'm going to go and empty the bins. It might be a chore that I need to do, but at least I'm moving my body. And then, because I've had a break in the middle, when I sit down to do my next lot of study, I'm also going to be more focused then on the next set. You know, you need to get them up and out of their seat and not just like, oh, my first 30 minutes is finished, I'm just going to check Facebook or Instagram or chat to a couple of my friends, because then they're not going to go back to do their study after that next 10-minute break. So the third thing would be learning styles. Now, this is another sort of buzzword that you'll hear, and it's not really a buzzword in the sense of it's all hype and it doesn't mean anything. These learning styles are actually really, really effective if you can identify what type of learner your child is and if they can identify what type of learner they are too, particularly if they then create study notes using one of those things that work well for them. So the first type of learner is an auditory learner. That's listening. So we take in information all the time from listening to things, but an auditory learner is one that takes in the most information when they are just listening. So some things that an auditory learner might try to do when they're creating their study notes or doing some study, it might include doing something like I'm doing, recording their notes or recording their ideas or dot points, and then listening back to it on a device. People have done studies on this forever, but there are, you know, HSC students that will record all of their notes and they just listen and listen and listen and listen using their iPod. They'll go for a walk and listen to it. They'll drive, they'll listen to it. They'll go to sleep even. I've heard people listening to it when they're going to sleep, and the idea is that their brain is subconsciously taking in this information. And it's that repetition as well. If I'm listening to the same thing over and over and over and over again, then I'm going to remember more and more and more of what is said. It's what we do with music. We listen to a song, and then the next time we hear the song, we know some of those lyrics. And the next time we hear it, we can sing it all the way through because we keep hearing it all the time. So it's the same idea when they're creating study notes if you're an auditory learner. The next type of learner is a visual learner, so someone that learns by seeing things. So that could be pictures, it could be diagrams, it could be color as well. So again, there's lots of stuff on Pinterest on how you can create, you know, study notes using pictures, and those pictures could just be the core ideas or concepts of some notes that you've created. It could be diagrams that show your notes. It could be even a mind map could be considered as a visual thing. So anything that you see. Color as well. There's been, again, lots and lots of studies on the use of color and highlighter. I know lots of younger, you know, year 7 to 9 students like to use the different pinks and purples and things in their books all the time. That use of color isn't very necessary and it isn't handy either. But if you are, you know, an older student and you're studying a particular book, for example, you might put the characters in a yellow highlighter and you might put the themes in an orange, and so the brain then can remember that color, and then the idea is that the color then connects with the things that they've been reading about that as well. You could, instead of highlighters, use colored system cards. You might have, you know, for algebra and how to do algebraic formulas, you might have blue system cards. When you're looking at area and perimeter, you might have yellow system cards. And so those types of things as well, dividing the colors up into different topics can also help. But again, check out Pinterest. There are so many different ways that people study and so many different ideas that you could use there. And the third type of learner is a tactile or kinesthetic learner, and they learn by doing. Now, I think that the best way to study is a combination of all those three things, though. So doing could be writing your notes by hand. It can be doing physical exercises, writing actual questions, writing actual responses. And that is super, super important if you're going to sit an exam and it's like an extended response you have to write for a period of time about a particular topic. Like I said, think that the best approach is a combination of things. Yes, I might be an auditory learner, so I learn more by listening, but if I'm only listening to my notes, then when it comes to writing them down, I'm going to forget my sequence and what I'm going to write, okay? Also, that handwriting skill is really, really important when we're thinking about studying. Lots of kids at the moment are putting their notes on their computer and they're typing them out. That's great, but there is notes. Did I write this one down? I have a feeling I did. Oh, here. So if you're typing on a computer, there has been studies, again, the studies everywhere, but Princeton University and the University of California in America did some studies to find that the note-taking on a computer was ineffective when compared to handwriting notes. Now, those notes that we take, we don't actually retain the information when we're just typing, and then we struggle to remember what we've written down. Now, note-taking on a computer is great if you're in a class and you struggle to handwrite, that's fantastic, but you then need to transfer them from your computer somewhere else, because it's true, like, we remember by actually physically writing the notes. And I did post something up a while ago that also said that writing in blue pen is better than black pen, and you remember more when you're writing in blue pen. So as much as some of these things seem ridiculous, it's worth a try. And there, like I said, there's studies done on these things absolutely everywhere. I think that if you are listening to something and then you are using color and diagrams, I'm not a drawer, so I wouldn't be drawing nice pictures to represent things, but then I'm actually physically doing the exercises, that's the best way when we're thinking about study and retention of information in particular. So that sort of brings us to, you know, what though? What is my child supposed to be studying? They're in year seven. What on earth should they be studying? How should they be studying? Now, like I said before, study is also homework and also assessments, not just studying before an exam. So when your child comes home with math homework, they're doing math exercises, they're reviewing a topic, they're revising a topic, they're practicing the skill that they have learned in the maths class. That is study in itself, but it's also homework. An assessment is study as well. So there is a idea that for an assessment to be created effectively, for teachers, they do something called backwards mapping. So what they write the assignment, and then they do all the lessons that come from that assignment afterwards, because what you expect the students to be able to do in the assignment, they should have already learned previously. So if I am expecting my students to be able to do a photo essay, then I should have taught in my class how to do a photo essay, what to put in it, so my students can go home and do that for their assessment. But we know that that's not always the case. We know that students get assessments that ask them to do these things and they have no idea. They've never heard of it. They've never been explained how to do it. So that notion would mean that my child would then have to go and look up what a photo essay is and look up how to do a photo essay and then what information to put it in it to then create the assignment. And that is study. You know, they're learning new skills, they're trying to put something together. It should be based on a topic that they have done in class already. So that's a form of study as well. Now, that's, you know, homework and your assessments, but you could also be getting your child to be revising information in year 7 to 9 as well. Now, I'm going to post over the next few weeks a whole heap of different English writing exercises for year 7 to 9 that they can be doing at home. That could be a form of study, you know, getting them to write in a journal, getting them to write a recipe for something, getting them to write a newspaper article. All of those things can be regarded as study as well. Getting them just to revise their notes if they struggle with geography and they need to remember the terms for a particular topic, then you might get them to write them down, write them in their book, write them in a nice way. I'm also going to go through shortly some different ways that you can revise content, and just so that you can get some ideas for your students as well. Most people won't revise anything in year 7 to 9 unless they have an exam coming up, and that's if they remember they have an exam coming up. So in terms of that, you know, you do what you can. But in year 10, it should be concept based, and year 10, your study will be setting you up for year 11 and 12. And so they should be practicing essays, and they should be having a more focused approach to their study so that they can collate their notes and review their notes before they have exams. In year 11 and 12, they should be following the syllabus, and you know, they can decide on the approach that works best for them by that stage. And that's something for them to consider as they get there. Now, 78% of females get stressed before exams compared to 58% of males. So that's a pretty big statistic when we're thinking about exams. And that is one of the reasons why we should be trying to get our kids to set up a study routine, because the more that they're comfortable with their notes and the more they understand it, the less stress they're going to have. So there's a few different forms of ways that you can create notes. Now, one of those is Cornell Notes. And this is a particular system that's used a lot in America. In 2010, though, there was a study by a state university in America, and it found that there were lots of added benefits to synthesizing and applying learned knowledge. And there was another study in 2013 that suggested that Cornell Notes helped with note-taking in the classroom. So not just out of the classroom, but in the classroom, and it's a method used by lots of people. I will post at the bottom of this podcast a PDF for you to download that has how you put each of these Cornell notes into play. But basically, you're going to divide your page into two. You're going to have a smaller column and a bigger column. The smaller column, it's recall, and you are going to get yourself or your kid to write keywords and questions of the content. Okay, so that's recall, something that they would go back and do after they've done their general notes. So the bigger side of the page is their general notes, and that can be dot points, it can be written in paragraphs, but I would suggest dot points is the easiest way to remember information. We don't want to overload ourselves with information. But if they are writing on the general notes about characters that are in a play, then the recall on the other side would be characters, and they could highlight that in a color to then help with that recall of information. Now, at the bottom of the page, you can then sort of divide it into thirds. At the bottom of the page, you would put a summary, and you would summarize what those notes are about. So again, this can work for 7 to 9, it can work for 10, 11 and 12 as well. It's all about finding which way your child, or which way you enjoy taking your notes and understanding them as well. So there's three other ones I'm going to quickly go through. Mind maps. I love mind maps. I'm a bit of a mind map freak. But I find mind maps really easy to put together and understand as well. It organizes my ideas. So you can do a straight mind map. So you could do, like, again, I'll do characters in a book. So if you're looking at characters in a book, in the middle of the page, you might have characters of whatever book. Around the outside, you might put the characters' names, and then around those characters' names, you might put some references that occur in the book or some quotes then from that to support your idea. So it's not just a traditional mind map where I'm just a mind dump where I'm just putting all my ideas. This form of a mind map is a bit more complicated, and I guess you could sort of call it a mind web or a spider web instead of a mind map. But we then, you know, we have the main idea in the middle, and then we have the next part, and then we have our quotes, and then we have our specifics further to that. So, you know, I like big paper as well. My students think I'm a bit crazy, but big paper, A3 paper, is the best size to do a mind map, because you're not going to run out of room. You don't want it to look messy though. You don't want to just put big writing on it because you're writing on big paper. The idea of writing on the big paper is that you have more room to put more notes. Now, you can then collate those notes really nicely. It means that I have my characters on one set, I have my themes on the other set, and then I might have my individual themes as I go through. Now, for 10, 11, and 12, those individual themes would then connect to different important events in the novel. It would then connect to techniques that I use, and then the quotes that I can use. And so I have all this information on my page that I can then use to create an essay. So the third one that I would suggest having a play around with is system cards. Again, you'll notice that all of these I would do handwritten. I would not use my computer. I want to retain as much information as I can. So when I'm first creating my notes, I'm going to handwrite them. So my system cards, again, you might do a similar idea to that mind map or to the Cornell notes, where you have a keyword or a key theme, and then you have dot points underneath. Again, I would stay away from paragraphs. We don't need to remember paragraphs of information, and when we're writing paragraphs, we use lots of words that are not necessarily important to remember. We want to remember the information, so that's why I'd use dot points. Nice, short, sweet, to the point. I've suggested it at the beginning of the episode, you might do different colored system cards. So like I'd said before, for maths, for one topic on Pythagoras, you might use blue system cards. Another topic on area, you might use green system cards, etc., etc. So then your mind's going to connect the color to what that system card is as well. You also want to make sure that you don't overload that system card with stacks and stacks of information. So maths is nice and easy, I think, when we're doing study notes, because you might have Pythagoras and the first thing on the front will be how to find the C, A squared plus B squared equals C squared, or the other way around. But you would then be able to draw a diagram of which each side is. And so you're not trying to squeeze all this information onto the system cards when you're using them for something like maths. If you're using them for something like science, you would do that as those dot points again, and you might put some diagrams and draw some diagrams in as well if you're needing to know molecules and all of that sort of thing. So system cards do work well. They are a bit more portable. So your Cornell notes you can put into a folder. Your mind map, if you're doing it on an A3, it's a bit harder to like take them places and transport them. Whereas my system cards, they're about the size of my palm, and I can easily go through them. I can take them with me if I'm going on holidays somewhere, and they're a bit easier to transport. Now, the other one is dot points. But like I said, I do dot points for my system cards and for my Cornell notes as well. But dot points by themselves would be similar to your Cornell notes, but you'd have your topic, and then you'd have your subtopic, and then your dot points underneath of those specific things. There are a million different ways though that you can create your study notes. So it is simply up to the student and the way that they remember it, but again, I would suggest writing them by hand and not putting them on your computer, because the first time that you're writing them out, you're going to remember them, and then you're going to read them and you might remember them. And if you're an auditory learner, you might then speak them into a dictaphone or into your phone, record them and listen to them. You might say them out loud and listen to them. You might then, well, you will then, not might, you will then go through and find some questions and you'll start answering those questions. So multiple choice, short answer, long response or extended response, essay style questions, and you'll start then practicing your actual ideas and putting your ideas on the page. And that is just as important as creating your study notes and having something to revise by. Now, it is important that we try and encourage our kids to create sets of study notes. Like I said, I would encourage it from year 9 and 10. Of course, it depends on your kid. They're probably not going to be very interested in creating study notes in year 9 and 10. They're definitely not going to be interested in it in year 7 and 8. Every kid is different, so make sure that you are thinking about that when you are trying to enforce some sort of study routine for them. But also remember, it doesn't have to be much. So 30 minutes and then getting them to do something active, another 30 minutes, and then that might be all for that night. So it is important though that kids are starting to go through and fix their study notes up, because 59% of students find that their notes from school don't help them when it comes to studying, and 21% actually don't even understand what they've written in class. So that's why it's really important that we start looking at study and study routines. And trying to encourage our kids to use study as a form. So that brings us to the end of this podcast. It was a little bit longer than I thought that it would be. Please jump into my socials, Instagram, Facebook, our website, send me an email if you have any questions at all about anything that I've gone through in today's episode, all about study. And remember, if you have a student or if you are in year 11 and 12 and even year 10 and you really need some help with studying and you want some specific one-on-one help, that and also our essay skills course, you can find all the information on my Facebook page. I have a new course coming out that will be available to be downloaded in sections to help you with these things. Hope you all have a wonderful day, and I hope that you join me for our next episode. Bye.